You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, a little business to clean up here. First off, the Daspit Law Firm is working for you 24-7. They are Houston personal injury attorneys. They handle personal injury cases, plant and refinery accidents, medical injury, industrial, 18-wheeler, and wrongful death. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-364-0915, DaspitLaw.com. You can also contact them both in English and Spanish toll-free at 888-273-1045. That's 888-273-1045. That is toll-free. So don't forget to check in with the Daspit Law Firm. Also, the Gorgeous Gale. Just wanted to remind you about that great company. The Gorgeous Gale is located over in West University. Great place for watching games. It is an Irish pub in the true vein of an Irish pub. Irish hospitality there. The Gorgeous Gale has wonderful domestic and crafted beer, strong whiskey offering, cocktails, exceptional food. It's thegorgeousgalebar.com, 5555 Morningside, West University. They're watching Premier League over there, all sports, but a heavy emphasis on soccer as well. Great place to catch events. Again, it's thegorgeousgale.com. So don't be afraid to head over to the Gorgeous Gale and check it out. Amigo Energy, pumped about the new year. They're pumped about the Dynamo season coming up, the Dash season, the European Championships, the close to the European seasons. And Amigo Energy wants to remind you it's a great time to save money while watching your favorite league. Now, weekends are going to be chock full of entertainment and all those games coming up. You got Copa Centenario, which, by the way, that's going to be unreal. Amigo Energy wants to save you money. Whether you're watching the Premier League Saturday mornings, Major League Soccer, you don't have to pay for energy on the weekends. That's right. Amigo Energy's weekends free program is just that. No energy charge from Friday, 7 p.m. through Sunday at midnight. Go ahead, invite your friends over, save money, entertain, watch your games, enjoy, and you don't pay for energy all weekend long, courtesy of Amigo Energy. It's our featured product of the month at www.amigoenergy.com/soccermatters. That's www.amigoenergy.com/soccermatters. So go online, learn more about amigoenergy.com/soccermatters. It's 888-995-9299, 888-995-9299. You go over, you enroll in Amigo Energy free weekends at amigoenergy.com/soccermatters. Begin to save money and begin to enjoy your games while knowing, hey, in the background, you're saving a lot of money. You like saving money? I do. It's Amigo Energy. All right, so before we get into the Bob Bradley interview, just a reminder. So we're going to start with the Bob Bradley interview this hour. We will then segue into Owen Coyle, the Dynamo manager, who's going to have a lot to say on a variety of topics. I ask him specifically in this interview about systems and setups and competition for places. By the way, the two Spaniards are now in town with the Houston Dynamo in Tucson, Arizona. Center midfielder David Rocha and the center back Agus. So these are two 30-year-olds that, in my mind, are coming here to be starters. I don't know why you bring them all the way from Spain if they weren't going to be starters. I think that's pretty easy to figure out. So they must think highly of these two players. I know for some of you, doesn't seem like the sexiest of hires when you hear what some of the other teams are doing. But you know what? We got to reserve judgment until they're here. These could be two very valuable and very important additions to the Houston Dynamo. Then after that, we're going to talk to Andrew Wenger. And Andrew Wenger is a remarkable athlete. So he talks about the competition for playing places out wide and how the team's trying to transition its purpose of play right now. After that, we'll finish off the night with a former Houston area product, Chris Bondi. Right now, I'm going to take you into Bob Bradley. Now, Bob Bradley is going to pick up this interview. By the way, I do want to thank Texas A&M, G. Guerrieri, Kurt Magnuson, Phil and Laurie Stevenson for inviting me up there to speak at their banquet with that very consistent program, one I've seen rise under G. Guerrieri. So thanks again for my time up at Texas A&M and Kyle Field this past weekend. So here's Bob Bradley talking about visiting a cancer hospital, and that's perfect in the vein of Kick Cancer and some of the charity we do here at Soccer Matters.
One of our favorite places in Cairo was the Children's Cancer Hospital. And normally we would like to go and do it in a quiet way. But we were made to believe that, you know what, it's important that you come here. It shows people what's happening. And if you don't mind, it will help us raise money. And so we did spots, and we allowed it to be out there. And there were times where we would be walking in our neighborhood, and a taxi would stop, and someone would get out of the taxi and walk over to Lindsay and I and say, we want to thank you for everything you do for Egyptians. So they're very warm people. They're very proud of their country and their culture. And if you're there and you're trying to do something that they think is good for the country, they'll never forget it.
Fascinating story, Bob. Is this testament to that when one goes to another country, you must be a part of the culture and you must be respectful? Those are all the things that obviously are coming through here. And I think that it sounds as though Egyptians recognize from you and your wife.
Yeah, I think that is important. I think that wherever you go, to get to know people, to let them know who you are, to care about what's happening in the country, to care about people, to try to connect. I mean, this is what happens in the best circumstances. And again, whether you're talking about Doctors Without Borders or whether you're talking about the Peace Corps or so many incredible operations that go and touch lives. I mean, to be part of something, to get to know people, to be there and try to let them know who you are. That's what it's all about. So when you have the chance, and football is incredibly important in Egypt. The recognition factor for me was through the roof. And at times, of course, you know, you needed a little privacy and everything, but still you knew that people still appreciated that you were there. I was asked more than anything else when I was in Egypt, why are you still here? Because the mentality there is when things go wrong, you leave. And as I mentioned, when I sat down and met with players and talked to them after Port Said and got a sense of the challenge, I spoke to all of them about how important it was that now we would try to be united, that we would try to show people what could happen if you work together. And in order to do that, it couldn't be that I was looking for a way out. So it's a test of your leadership. And I've been lucky over the years, different situations. I feel like I've been able to stand for something, to lead in a way that people appreciated, to try to build a group that has strength and pride, and I talk about that all the time. So for me, Egypt was not the first time I was in that situation, but it was a different experience and one that we'll always remember.
Bob Bradley joining us here on ESPN 97.5, then went on to coach Stabæk in Norway. That made Bob the first American coach in a top league, now at Le Havre in the French League 2. And it's pretty remarkable, the different cultures you've gone through. I mean, this whole uprising in Egypt, being a part of this. As you move on and you move forward now and you're in France, how has this enriched you as a coach? Because obviously the cultural side of it is one thing, but then there's all these differing playing styles and emphasis on maybe different things in different countries, right?
Yes, that's true. But what I found over the years is still that my ideas on the game stood up. When I coached in Major League Soccer, I was tested and challenged by a lot of really big players. And, you know, when you coach guys like Peter Novak and Lubos Kubik and Christos Stoichkov and Yuri Djurkaeff and Claudio Suarez, you get tested. And that was one of the reasons why I was always anxious to move up. And when you coach guys like that, you can't be afraid of them, you know. You can't be afraid to get on top of them on days when they're not into it or to hold them to high standards. You know, I remember tough days with all those guys. I still share some great moments with Christo because he knew in certain days when I would be on top of him for either not being into it or not treating certain teammates the right way. And guys respect when you hold them to real standards, when you understand football, when you run good training sessions, when you make tough decisions and you look them in the eye. And so by the time I got to Egypt and by the time I got to Norway and now here, my ideas were pretty set. Now, of course, you always try to pick up new things. But probably more than anything, what I would end up saying after these different experiences is that, you know, in every country there's a coaching manual. There's one in the U.S. There's the coach of the head of the academy in Stabæk was from Spain, so we had the Norwegian manual, we had the Spanish manual. Now I know the French manual. They all have some parts that are the same, and they all have some little twists. But what I've found in every situation is that you don't coach with the manual. And I used to tell the young coaches in Norway, and I've said the same to the young ones here in France, that you need to know what's in the manual, but when it comes time to coach, leave it on the shelf. Because coaching is still about personality and ownership and leadership and knowing how to challenge players and notice and knowing how to push training sessions. And you know, probably the thing that I've also said more than anything else is that I've seen too many coaches that they coach the exercise. If you say today we were going to work on transition, then they have five training sessions for transition. But what happens is they coach the exercise and they don't coach the game and they don't coach the players. And I find this incredible. So, you know, in Norway, the word got out, and there were coaches from all over Norway that would show up to watch our training because it was different than what they were used to. And when I took the UEFA Pro course in Norway, they were very interested to know how I developed my ways on the field, what were my influences, because it was different. So, you know, at the end of it all, when you're involved in football, you get tested. And when your ideas hold up, when you are able to develop players, when your teams play good football, when people enjoy watching the team play and see something different, then they want to know, how did it get that way? And so I've enjoyed being part of these different situations and getting to know how things work, but also giving them an idea of who I am and how I got that way.
He's Bob Bradley joining us here, Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5, joining us from France now, the manager of Le Havre and the French League 2. Fascinating stories here. Bob, how much, like, you know, obviously tactically you have a vision of how the game wants to be, you want it to be played, although it's ever-changing, we know that. How much did you have to maybe pull off some of your positions in these different countries in order to remain flexible as a manager? Because we do know some managers can run their course if they aren't flexible. You obviously have been.
Yeah, in every situation I've been in, the first day I normally end up saying something like, I didn't come here with all the answers. I have my ideas on football and how it should be played, but I need to get to know you and you need to get to know me. And then together we're going to figure out how we're going to have a good team. And you've got to understand the game at all levels to then try to piece what your team's going to look like. You know, I can remember even going back with our U.S. teams. When we would play different teams. When you saw what it was like to play Sweden, and you had Elmander and Ibra as the strikers, when Luis Fabiano was the striker for Brazil, one of the things you piece together quickly is physically the challenge that your center backs had. And then the fact that it meant that you needed guys that could defend, guys that weren't afraid to play against big players. And of course, you want to play football. You want to try to find passes out of the back. But having said that, the first requirement for central defenders is that they can defend. And I remember when we started working with Jay DeMeritt in his early years at Watford. I don't think he was ever called on to make a pass. But then, you know, Maki McKay got there. They started to play a little bit of football. And when he would come in with the U.S., we would just try to say, look, Jay, you know, we still need in certain moments that you have enough confidence that when there is a little window that you can play certain balls into the midfield. But at the same time, if you feel it's tight, then we understand. Look to play to our forwards. And so you've got to have a sense then that you know, if your center backs are Jay DeMeritt and Gucci Onyewu, then guess what? Your football is going to look different than if your center backs are Puyol and Pique. But those guys improved. And I love the fact that every time we played against a big team, and now you're hugging guys before the game and looking in them in the eye and making sure they're ready. And Jay would give me a little wink, like, Wayne Rooney, no problem, right? And so your ideas on how you want to play have to fit with who your players are. They have to fit with then what the game is going to look like. We had many games with the U.S. where we were able to be a little bit more in control. But having said that, if we played Spain, we also knew from watching all of their games that, like it or not, they were going to have the ball more than us, and that we needed to still find a way that we could make it hard on them. We could still make them defend when we had the ball, and that even if the percentage was 60-40, you know, I think before the Confederations Cup semifinal, I said, come on, can we even get it a little better than that? But either way, it doesn't matter, because if we can cause their center backs some trouble, if we can be a threat, if we can make them feel the speed of Altidore, the speed of Charlie Davies, if we can shut things down in the center of the field so Xavi doesn't have an easy day, then guess what? We can play football. We can beat this team. So your tactics and your ideas have to fit your players, and they've got to be prepared in a way that when those players walk on the field, every single guy believes, you know what, we're going to win today.
Bob, thank you so much for, first of all, giving us all this time. We appreciate it. We're looking forward to catching up with you again down the road here, because we want to keep this rolling with Bob Bradley and keep following your career over in Europe.
Good, Glenn. All the best.
We'll take a break. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. This is the best in soccer talk.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gao Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to ESPN, and it's once again that time to talk to the Dynamo manager. He's Owen Coyle. We go to Tucson, Arizona. Owen, thank you very much, as always, coming on the program. And, well, how's things going out there this week in Tucson?
It's been great. It's been fantastic to get the training, but also, as you know, nothing beats getting the match fitness. And that's been important. Obviously, we've already played Portland, we've already played San Jose, and we finished the trip tonight against Vancouver, and we'll look to play four periods of 30 minutes, and that'll allow most of the squad to get some valuable match time. So, yeah, it's been very worthwhile.
Now, is this a point where you're trying to maybe extend the minutes a little bit with what is your perceived starters going into 2016? Because, man, it's hard to believe. March 6th is just around the corner.
Yeah, it comes around quickly, doesn't it, Glenn? But you're right. I think the first game against Portland, we look to give Well, we used 23, 24 players. So the most anybody got was 45 minutes. Then moving in the other night, a number of them was 45, but we managed to get three or four 60 minutes, and we'll look to do that tonight again. I mean, Vancouver, they've brought a huge squad of players with them, so they were asked us, would we extend the minutes, which I'm quite happy to do. So we'll play four periods of the 30 minutes, and that will allow us to hopefully get everybody 60 minutes under the belts tonight, and depending if one or two are feeling strong, might get close to 75, and as you say, Glenn, start building up to that important 90 minutes.
Owen, the whole monitoring of players as you, you know, begin to kind of try to peak a little bit more as you get into the beginning of the season, I got to think this is exhausting, and it takes an entire staff to do when it comes to every single individual player you have on this team, because they've all got different things going on, right, and different rates of getting to peak fitness.
Well, exactly, as you know. I mean, what we obviously do, as you know yourself, we put a collective session on for the whole group, and then within that there's some individual requirements that need to be tinkered and tailored to that individual. So, and that's what we do. And you're right, I mean, every minute the play is monitored in respect of looking to balance those match the minutes in terms of the match practice, because important thing come March 6th against New England, that's when we're looking to peak and then carry that on for the duration of the season. So there's an awful lot of planning, there's then a lot of preparation. And again, we do have one or two little knocks and injuries that we won't get any chances with. And, Christian Maidana, Ricardo Clark. But I would hope towards the weekend we can start building up some minutes with them. Agus and Rocha, they'll now be in market today, so they'll join up with the group on our return. So bit by bit, it's just bringing them all together and moving forward at the same time.
He's Owen Coyle, the Dynamo manager. You mentioned Agus and David Rocha coming in now. It must be great to get them in camp, but probably a settled feeling for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were hoping they would have had them for some sort of this Arizona trip, but, you know, obviously with the visas and you know, the bit of red tape and organising when they fall into line, then obviously they've just missed out. But they're in just now. The players will have a day off and they're starting on Thursday, but myself and a couple of my staff, we'll be in on Thursday with David Roach and Agus to get them a little bit of work done so that they're able to just, I would hope, seamlessly just slip in with the group on Friday when they all return and go from there.
Now, I know it's tough sometimes to single out individual players. It's a couple weeks in here now. But some of the youth, or maybe the youth in general, some of the newbies, have they settled in to your expectations at this point?
Yeah, I've been pleased, Glenn, by, you know, the biggest single thing at the moment is building up that match fitness. And, you know yourself, if you've a couple of great performances in the first two games of pre-season, that's great for the individual, building confidence. The important thing is you're ready to give those performances when the season starts. But it's been nice to see. I think Manotis has looked sharp. I think Lionel Miranda's, you know, considering Leo came in at the last minute in terms of the when we managed to get the deal done, he's come in and did well in the games. Andrew Wenger did very well. There's been a number of players. I think it's, as you say, it's a bit unfair to be singling out too many. But, you know, there's been a number of players I've been very pleased with.
Owen, as you get to work now a couple weeks with Andrew Wenger, what is it the Dynamo fans should be looking for from him?
Well, I think I would hope you'll see a player at the top of his confidence, a player that has pace and power. And, you know, I'm encouraging him every day. He's played on the wide and the right on both the matches, 45 minutes against Portland, 60 minutes against San Jose. And he looked a threat. But as I say, you know, it's early days. It's only pre-season, but we know that he has pace, we know he's powerful, he likes to put early crosses in as well. So, yeah, I think the fans will be excited by this type of player.
Owen Coyle joining us here, the Houston Dynamo in action tonight against Vancouver, 4:30-minute period, so some extended playing time for younger players as well. Owen just mentioning in this interview that others will get more extended minutes, up around 60 minutes. As we get closer to March 6th in the New England Revolution, let's go back to some of your preseason thoughts and the wide game. And I know this is something you've talked a lot about. But in order to get the wide game going, obviously you got to get the players you want. You feel like you've got them now. How do you work a team into sort of understanding the purpose of play that you want to put forth and that is a winger-oriented game. I mean, is it as simple as, look, we get the ball, we get wide as quick as we can, and we get it to our wingers? I mean, I know it must be more than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's Lenton else. It's one thing to say that. I think the important thing, Len, is, you know, is implementing that, and that's done with the hard work on the training ground. And again, we don't have, as we speak at this point, we've not been able to put all our pieces together in terms of how we want to go about doing that. So I think on our return to Houston, you know, that'll be a good working week in preparation for the second trip to Arizona and in the Desert Cup. And then, you know, by that point, I would hope that, you know, Ricardo Clark's fit, we have Maidana, we have Igus, we have Rocha, complementing all the other, I think, very good pieces that we have. And I think then we were able to structure that in terms of the training plan and look to implement it, and everybody have an understanding of what their individual and collective responsibility is for the team, both with the ball and against the ball. And if we do that, then I think it'll put us in a nice place. But we're under no illusions, Glenn. I mean, we, as always, we were looking, as the Dynamo have done before, looking to punch above our weight. We're never going to have the financial resources of all the, you know, you look at some of the signings we've made, the finance that's been spent. Well, you know, that's not the bracket that we fall into, but we still are very excited about the team that we can put together and be in there challenging, as I say, looking to win those playoffs with a chance of the ultimate prize.
So, Owen, you know, a lot of people from the outside look in and go, well, it looks like it's going to be a team that'll have, you know, two deeper midfield players. Looks like it. This is speculation from the outside. Nobody's telling you what to do. But they're thinking maybe it's Ricardo Clark. Why would David Rocha be brought to Spain? He's likely somebody that they're hoping is going to be a starter. But is there a chance that, you can build a system, even with a playmaker like Maidana that might not have the defensive responsibilities, that could get both a Kubo Torres and a Will Brun, or, you know, two strikers on the field? I would throw Manotas into that as well. Is that still a possibility you're tinkering with? I'm sure that would be something you would use at times in games. I'm not sure you would start it like that. But is that a possibility still to play with two strikers and Maidana?
Well, there's always permutations. And of course, anything, as we know, can change quickly in games in terms of the personnel you have available. The games here, we've played with two strikers a number of times with Torres and Manotas. And they've hooked up together in both games, and they will do tonight again. And prior to that, you know, Barnes and Brown had played. But again, obviously, when Maidana comes in, it's flexibility. But there is, you know, there can be different styles and shapes and everything else. The important thing, Glenn, and this is as people have got to understand, it's not just about who's on the field, it's what the team does. And the team looks to be pleasing the eye and passing, moving the ball. And that's the key to any team. I mean, you could go in six forwards in your team, and there'll be no balance to your team. So again, it all comes down to balance. You must have the right balance for your team to be looking to win games, because that's what you want to do, but equally be entertaining. So balance is the key to everything. But of course, within different structures, you can get different personnel involved.
Yeah, and without a doubt, I mean, I think that's one of the intriguing areas to look at, because if you do play with a lone striker, you got three very talented strikers and incredible competition there. Do you feel like you got good competition in the wide areas as well?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we have, as you know, with Andrew Winger there, Miranda's come back, Boniek can play there. On the other side, obviously, Giles can play. Giles can play wide, Lovejoy can play there. The young kid Carter's come in and did very well in the early part. So there's always flexibility within our roster. That's what we're trying to do, and it's important you continue to build that up. Now, moving forward, that's the type we want to match runners at the top end of the field. And you know, and if you played with a striker and a Maidana, you know, and two wingers, I mean, you don't get much more attacking than that in the league than the personnel we were putting on the field to go and be exciting. So regardless of how it comes about, we're looking to match one at the top end of the field in the wide positions, as you know, through the middle, because we do believe we have goal scorers. And playmakers, I mean, we've not had a Christian Maidana, truth be told. So it'll be nice when he comes in to see how he can complement those other pieces that we have.
Well, it sure does seem like it's going to be a team that creates a lot more chances. Owen, listen, we really thank you very much for your time, as always. Best of luck tonight against Vancouver. We look forward to the Dynamo returning to Houston. They will take on Houston Baptist University on the weekend. That's a game that'll be, I believe, open to the public, so Dynamo fans will have an opportunity down at Houston Sports Park at 11 a.m. on the weekend. The Dynamo taking on our local Division I men's team, Houston Baptist University. Owen, as always, thank you very much.
Pleasure, Glenn. I love that. And I'll speak to you soon, Paul.
Take care. Sir. Thank you. That's Owen Coyle, Dynamo manager. We'll take a break. A lot more to come here. It's Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. From the Gau Studios in Houston, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters. A nice Bud Light 7-Up break there, and it's a great opportunity to get out to Tucson, Arizona. One of the new Dynamo signings this year from the Philadelphia Union. He's Andrew Wenger, now a full-blown Houston Dynamo member. He joins us now. Andrew, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me, Glenn.
All right, let's get some of your initial thoughts just on the overall preseason and you playing under a new manager in Owen Coyle.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, preseason, it's always kind of just about getting yourself going and getting yourself integrated into the team, no matter where the team is. So that's been good in that sense, but also it's been good to train under Owen and also the rest of the staff and understand how they work and how their sessions are run and what is expected.
You've had different coaches throughout your career. How would you sort of describe Owen Coyle as a coach? Is he an autocratic coach, democratic? How does he work with players?
He's demanding, but also pretty positive. And when there is an issue, it's pretty clearly stated what is expected, which is helpful. I mean, there's a fast game, and it's nice to know what is expected and pretty quickly. You don't really have to try to read between the lines.
Andrew Wenger joining us. So I spoke with Owen Coyle. He spoke about the competition, and we spoke about the competition in the striker position. But it's obviously a lot of competition in the wide areas as well. Boniac Garcia, Lovejoy, Barnes, Wenger, Miranda. How do you feel the competition every day? Is it something you really feel? And are guys in a healthy way looking over their shoulders?
I think absolutely. I think they've done a good job putting the team together, and there's guys in every position that are looking to get minutes. And that's really what makes a successful club over the course of 1 year and multiple years. And I think we have that here.
Do you feel like that's pushing your game? In other words, does that help to expand your game? Because anybody who's reached the level you have, I think, has got to really believe and sort of enjoy the competition.
Absolutely. I think the most important thing is it's a long season. And, I mean, you can be good for a week or two, but the point is being good over a long, over a period of time, over the course of the season. And having competition, a healthy competition, forces you to do that.
All right. So when you get to Arizona and you get a lot of games in, does this kind of spike the interest level a little bit, the fact that you're getting some live competition against other players and other clubs?
Absolutely. I mean, you finally can start getting into tackles. So you, I mean, I don't think you're hurting anyone at this point, but it gets faster, and you can start really trying to figure the game out and figure the team out.
All right, so if I asked you, and this isn't easy for people to do always, but if I asked you, what type of a winger are you? And the Dynamo fans wanted to know, what type of winger is Andrew Wenger? How would Andrew Wenger answer that question?
I'd say that Andrew Wenger is a pretty strong and athletic player that's looking to get, and an honest worker that's looking to get up and down and combine with players and also run it back for us and trying to create chaos in a sense, and then get good balls in the box.
Now, is part of your job sort of balancing out sort of a mixing up of your game, in other words, to set up opposing players? In other words, if, you know, we've seen many a college player come into the pro game, and in college it was easily effective to push balls and chase them and get behind people. Obviously, the defenders get smarter. They're more intelligent. And you do have to kind of set them up, right, through a mixture of combination play, when you take people on, when you make angled runs inside towards the penalty area. Talk a little bit about that and how you make yourself unpredictable, because, after all, wingers got to be unpredictable, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could almost, if you were to see any of our preseason games, that might be a small look at it. I mean, the first game, Portland plays pretty wide open, and I was able to pick the ball up a little bit more at my feet and then have Shannon overlap, or with me coming inside and playing him back or playing it off the striker then wide. Where in the San Jose game, the game was a little bit more end-to-end, and a little bit tighter at times. So at times I was just kind of making flashing runs centrally, and Shane was able to come around and pick up balls from our central midfielders with time to serve the ball in the box. So each game is going to have something different, and you kind of have to try to figure that out as quickly as possible, what might be effective that day.
Well, you and Shane know each other, so that's pretty comfortable, right?
Oh, it certainly is. I understand kind of where he wants me to pick up defensively and kind of the angles, and then he knows what my movements are when I'm going away or coming to kind of play the ball in the correct spots.
So have you been watching any of the Premier League lately, Andrew?
Yeah, quite a bit of the United-Chelsea game the other day. A little disappointed to see United give up a late goal, but he saw it coming.
So what about their two wingers, Jesse Lingard, who scored that ridiculous goal, and then, of course, Anthony Martial?
I mean, but once again, you see two very different wingers. I mean, Martial is looking just to get the ball and run at people, where Lingard is a little bit more technical and might actually be more comfortable playing as a 10, but is playing wide.
And you, right, the ball's on the opposite side of the field. I mean, I'm assuming Owen Coyle wants you getting in the box as a target player.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, especially if we're going to play with one player up top. If the ball's coming from the left, we need two guys in the box, or three, whoever the number 10 is, to make give us a good chance.
Boy, that's got to be a moment you really relish, right? Coming from a wide area, getting into the box, and getting on the end of delivery.
I mean, that's really the best way to score a goal, right? Otherwise, it's going to be pretty tough to do it coming from the right with the ball at your feet at times. But it's great to get good service and get in the box and see what can be made of it.
Well, listen, we're glad you're healthy. We're glad you're having a great preseason. We're looking forward to the opener against New England on the 6th of March. Continued success. Hope you have a good run out tonight against Vancouver. And, Andrew, when you get back to Houston, we look to talk to you again.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Glenn.
All right. He's Andrew Wenger, a very busy guy out in Tucson, Arizona. We tried to squeeze that interview via the phone. He's got meetings and all kinds of other things going on with the Houston Dynamo. Life of a pro player in preseason is a pretty busy one. We'll take a break. Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 from the Gau Studios in Houston. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. As everybody knows here in Houston, Texas, we do have a rich connection to the college game with a tremendous youth community here and adult soccer community. Over the years, I think Houston in some ways has been bypassed, but we have produced and then distributed to universities and colleges all over the country incredible talent at both the men and women's levels in the collegiate game. One of those, Chris Bondi, played locally here for the Cy-Fair Dynamos and the Hurricanes Soccer Club back in the day. Went to the University of Connecticut, was a first-team All-American there, won a national championship, won the Herman Award as the number one player in the college game, and then was drafted number one in Major League Soccer. His career took him to FC Dallas, to Norway, and he also was capped once by Liberia, has been in the college game, was an assistant coach at Dartmouth College with Chad Riley, now recently named the head coach of Northeastern University. He joins us now. Chris, thank you very much for a little bit of your time.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Glenn.
Well, listen, congratulations on getting the Northeastern job. I know you've been hoping to be a Division I coach. It seems you've gone about it methodically, trying to get the proper experience before jumping in as being the head man now.
Yeah, no, after I was done playing, I just thought, obviously I've been around the game for a long time, and I love the teaching piece of it. And yeah, I went about it. I thought it was, at the time, just think about it, I thought it was the right way. And obviously landing up here, I think, you know, hopefully some other young coaches can kind of do similar to what I did, you know, in terms of going back to my alma mater and then also realizing that I think coaching at a small academic school like Holy Cross would help me, and then obviously getting to Dartmouth in terms of the reputation there and ultimately led me to this position I'm in.
Yeah, how excited were you when you were named the coach in Northeastern? Because you have a wonderful opportunity in a great soccer part of the country up there.
Yeah, no, you know, I was very excited. You know, it's one of those things, you know, it's bittersweet a little bit because you recruited a lot of quality young men up at Dartmouth and you're going to have to leave them But those guys made it very, you know, easy for me to make the decision because they were quite understanding. They realized this was such a great opportunity for me. Northeastern is a, you know, wonderful institution in terms of, you know, higher learning and just being in the city of Boston in terms of recruiting really makes it, you know, not necessarily easy, but it makes it a bit understanding, I guess, for kids to come in and want to live in Boston. So, yeah, no, it was, I think for me, it was a no-brainer for me and my family.
Now, I'm sure your head is spinning with a lot of things you have to put in place, including a staff and getting to events and recruiting and everything. Now, obviously, with your ties here in Houston and playing in Dallas with FC Dallas, should we be on the lookout for Chris Bondi recruiting soccer players out of Houston and Dallas in those areas?
Oh, of course. Yeah, of course. You know, I think obviously I have a soft spot for players from Texas, you know, especially the Houston area. You know, I know now there's a there's a quite a bit of players coming up the ranks, you know, from my time there. So, yeah, no, I'll be making a lot of trips down south to make sure we get some players up here in Northeastern.
So, from your time playing the college game, I guess you ended in 2001 or 2002. In your time playing the college game to where you see it now, you know, 13 years later, what changes, if any, do you see in the game at the collegiate level? Do you see it the same? Do you see it improved? If it's improved, what areas of it do you look a little bit better?
Yeah, no, I think it's improved. You know, I think sometimes college do, you know, the game gets a little bit of a bad rap in terms of, you know, the development because there's only, you know, such a short season in 3 months. But, yeah, no, I think it's improved from my time, right? You're getting a lot of these younger players that are able to come in and play right away. I know during our time, we were fortunate enough to go to UConn and play right away. But usually, in most cases, you have, you know, players coming in have to sit a couple of years, at least back then. But now these guys are coming in already established. I think the academy has something to do with that. And nowadays, kids are just playing a lot more, I believe, in terms of, with the academy stuff and their club and different things like that. So I think from that standpoint, it's improved quite a bit. So, yeah, I think it's only going to get better, right? The game's only going to get better. If you look at some of the guys on the national team, a lot of them, at least that went to the World Cup, I think half the group played in college. So the college game, I think, is here to stay. And I think it's only going to get better with the league, the MLS, the way it is.
He's Chris Bondi, the new coach at Northeastern University, born in Bong Mines, Liberia. Obviously, Chris, I don't think you mind me telling that your family moved here due to the unrest in the Civil War in Liberia. Your brother, Sandy, also was a soccer player, professional soccer player. Your parents moved here. The recruiting is such a big part of the college game. You know, how do you go about putting a plan together in what events you pick to recruit, how you recruit? You know, obviously you can watch a player once and he can look like a world beater, but if you watch them over 10 games, he might not. How do you do all those checks and balances when you come to looking for players that are, number one, going to meet the academic standards of Northeastern, but number two, be excellent soccer players?
Yeah, no, I think you hit on the head, right? You do have to watch them more than once. I think any coach that said, okay, I watched a kid once and knew exactly what he was going to be in college, he'd probably be lying to you. I think you do have to watch him more than once and then have a staff that, you know, have difference of opinion. Because I could be the head coach and say, I'll go watch this guy and he's unbelievable. And then, you know, you have an assistant or associate head coach that go watch him. It's like, well, you know, he may not have been, you know, he wasn't good in this game that I watched. So, yeah, you just have to have your staff that understand exactly what you're looking for in each player. And then obviously each position is a little bit different in terms of what you're looking for. So, you know, in most cases, we do our homework before we go out to these events. There's a lot of events now with a lot of showcases. I think for a school like Northeastern, we're pretty strategic in terms of where we go to watch these games. And for the most part, I think we'll be able to do a decent job in getting some quality student athletes here.
Now, the NCAA College Cup, which I'm fortunate to call each and every year, is going to be held here in Houston in 2016. When I looked at the teams last year, there is a lot of foreign talent coming, and there are teams that recruit a lot of foreign players. What's the balance for you at Northeastern? Are you strictly about the American player? Are you willing to go overseas and look for additional players that might add something from a maturity standpoint or some different qualities that might enhance the others around you?
Yeah, I think, to be honest, right now, you were to look at our roster, we do have quite a bit of foreign players. You know, ultimately, I would, my coaching tenure here, I think I want to have a good balance, because I think that obviously the foreign players do bring something unique and a bit different. And then also I think the American players do bring something unique and different as well. So can you have a good balance with it? You know, I'd be naive and I say, okay, yeah, I'm not going to look at any foreign talent, because that's kind of closing up, you know, half the world. The game and the college game in popularity keeps growing, right? So I think a lot of people, in terms of obviously the MLS folks, keep knocking the college game, but then you see a lot of these young Germans or young, you know, English players or wherever coming from different countries and understand their, you know, gateway to getting to MLS or at least starting from being a pro and getting an unbelievable education is through the college game. So is there a lot of stuff that we do need to work on in the college game? Of course, but I think it's always going to be an opportunity for guys that are willing to come here and obviously and work hard and get an opportunity to go play at the next level.
He's Chris Bondi joining us. Houston area product, named the Northeastern University head coach, was an assistant at Dartmouth, ironically, with a club teammate, Chad Riley. Both played for the Hurricane Soccer Club. You, prior to that, played with the Cyfair Dynamos as well. Speak to me a little bit about your time in Norway, because you spent a season in Norway. You played 37, 38 times there. Your trip to Norway, how does that fit into your coaching curriculum? What did you learn over there when playing in a foreign country?
Yeah, Norway was probably one of the best experiences in my soccer playing career, to be honest with you. And if I had to do it over again, I probably would have gone there a little bit earlier, because I felt, you know, I developed so much during my time there. Not to say, obviously, MLS doesn't, you know, back then I didn't develop to what I needed to, but it was just one of those things where I went there, you play a lot of games, and you know, it's quite intense in terms of the training, because Norway is a developing league in terms of trying to sell players off to bigger clubs in Europe, right? So when I went over there, I was 28, but they were still trying to find a way to develop me, to sell me on. So it was one of those countries that I really, really enjoyed. And if there's a young American player that, you know, had a couple of years at MLS and wanted to go experience the Tippa Liga or the Deca Liga, you know, I'll recommend it highly, because, yeah, it's a place that the people are very nice, are very friendly to U.S., you know, to American citizens, and I had an unbelievable time there.
Well, Chris, congratulations. I've had a lot of people reach out to me, you know, saying, hey, did you see Chris Bondi is the Northeastern coach? A lot of your ex-teammates, like your guys at UConn, all reaching out. And also had some guys reaching out saying they'd like to be your assistant coach, which I'm sure they've gotten through to you right now. That's going to be your choice, not mine. But listen, thank you very much for coming on, representing Houston and our great collegiate soccer history here as well as you have.
Yeah, no, Glenn, I really appreciate it. And obviously, I just want to say thanks to all the people in Houston that supported me over the years. So thank you very much. And obviously, Glenn, thanks for having me.
All right, Chris, take care. And we look forward to having you on the show again.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, that's former FC Dallas defender. He played in Norway as well. More importantly, for those of you listening in here, and a reminder on the importance of what happens when we supply talent all over the country to the college game, at universities and colleges, both male and female. Chris Bondi is an example of that, and has now remained in the game and has now become a head coach at Northeastern. That'll do it for Soccer Matters here on ESPN 97.5. A big thank you to producers David Philpott and Tyler Scott, and also you, the soccer fan, for listening in and bringing your opinion. 2016 is going to be an amazing year in the world of football. It's Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, Facebook Soccer Matters, Glenn Davis Soccer over on Instagram. Until the next time, have a good night. Oh,